show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some Royals baseball for you here. Things are heating up. We're past the initial phase of, you know, the season start where the days off are really kind of screwy. It's starting to get into, you know, there's still some days off in April and such, but it's starting to get into that more consistent baseball. And so all that means is there's more Royal stuff to talk about. But before we get into that, introductions, of course, I am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, the indefatigable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very wonderful evening? I took a walk before the show with the wife and the kid. It's very, very nice outside with the weather and such.
I came home and sat on the couch. That's what I did.
Fantastic. That's my plan for the rest of the evening.
Oh, yeah. It's a great plan, too. I'm good, though. I'm able to mostly avoid Game 7 reminders.
Game 7 reminders, which should be prevalent because as we record this on Wednesday, was it April 19th? Is that today?
April 19th.
Yeah, April 19th.
Yeah.
Wow. So as we record this on April 19th, the Royals are having the vaunted rematch, Game 7 of the 2014 World Series against Madison Bumgarner. Mad Bum, if you will, for the Joe Buck crowd. You know, it's I mean, there's not much to say. Madison Bumgarner, one of the best pitchers, one of the best players in the game. The dude had flipping two home runs opening day to support his own cause, which he pitched incredibly well anyway. So, I mean, you know, he's a very good hitter for a pitcher. So it goes beyond just pitching. Very good player. That's the most praise you'll ever hear out of me, Madison Bumgarner.
I hate him.
Because
it's not hate like in the Jose Bautista, Josh Donaldson,
right, exactly,
punchable John face Elway, kind of hate. It's,
you know, yeah.
It's in the God dang it, why is he so good kind of
exactly, hate. Exactly. It's a respectful hate. The hate that comes out of respect for how good they are and that they're on somebody else's team and not the one that I root for. Similarly, I felt about Carmelo Anthony. Still dislike him due to Syracuse beating Kansas in the 2003 National Championship game and Jerry McNamara as well. But Jerry McNamara.
No, he's in the punchable face category for
me. That's fair. He's borderline. But
yeah,
Carmelo Anthony definitely is in that Madison Bumgarner group of. Yeah, he
you tip
not,
your
not
cap
quite.
And flip him off in the same
exactly,
motion.
Yeah. Tip your cap with the middle finger.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're John Elway, you just get the middle finger. Or if you're Josh Donaldson or, you know, whoever else.
Right, right.
Maglio Ordóñez. I don't know. We're going to mention Maglio Ordóñez at this point every episode. That's my goal for the rest of the season.
That'll be tough to work in.
It will be, but we've.
But that's hence, we've had, hence the fun of the challenge.
That's right. We've had Kit Pello references.
Kit Pello.
I wish we could. We should go back through our shows at some point and count up all the Kit Pello references. That'd be funny. Also, way more work than probably I want to do. But
if anybody else out there wants to do that,
yes, please
be our guest.
Just, well, perhaps if Kit Pello's listening and you've been counting, tabulating your own references in the show, please drop us a line. We'll have you on the show.
Also, we're sorry. We don't mean to be like snarky about it.
But we kind of do, though.
We kind of do, because it's
kind of do, because it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, you were in the major leagues and we weren't, so you can always have that going
for
you. Now, speaking of major leagues, we do have some baseball to talk about. So last week was, let's put it this way, we weren't necessarily in a good place. It's too early to judge, still too early to judge, but you know, you get starting to get more of a picture as always, and more the more you get, the more games are played, the more of a picture you have. And so let's see, last week they would have been 2-5 when we recorded. Is that right?
Let's see. I'm trying to recall who was pitching that day.
Vargas?
Yeah, I think they may have. No, they lost the game. They lost the game because I remember thinking, oh no, we've played in a game or we recorded when the Royals lost again.
Yeah, and Mondesi hit a home run. Because we talked about how poorly he was playing, and then of course he promptly hit a home run,
430-some-foot home run.
Yeah. Yes,
more on him later.
Indeed, stay tuned. Anyway, regardless, whatever the record was when we were last recorded, it wasn't necessarily great, and they weren't performing that well.
They would have been. They went to 2-6 after that.
There you go.
So
that's what and then doing. Right after that. They won 4 straight games to pull back to 500, which included a sweep of the Houston Astros. And
no, the LA Angels.
Oh, I'm sorry, Angels. Sorry, they won two out of, they won the last game of the Astros series, and then they swept the Angels. My fault. So very positive, especially because the Angels had been playing well, and. You know, I don't know that I'm a believer necessarily in the Angels, but, you know, some of the pundits thought they were primed to have a pretty good season and give, you know, Rangers and Mariners a run for their money in the West. You know, obviously, whenever you have the best player on the planet in Mike Trout, you're probably in good shape. Now, it certainly helped the Royals that they were able to miss Garrett Richards, the ace of the Angels staff, due to an injury for him. So that's always good. But regardless, they swept all 3 games, got to 6-6, and then promptly lost last night to zombie pitcher Matt Cain.
Zombie Matt Cain.
So they've dipped back below 500. And, you know, some of the problems that the Royals, this game they lose to Matt Cain, of all people, they only got one run. One run.
Yeah.
The game went into extra innings, 11 innings, and obviously Cain didn't pitch all of them, but with what Cain pitched and the getting deep into the bullpen, the Royals only mustered one single run. They were 1-11 with runners in scoring position, okay? So that game, they lose 2-1, by the way, that game was basically a microcosm of what the entire season has been so far. You know, great performance by Jason Hammel to start the game. He went, did he get into seventh inning?
Started the seventh,
but didn't finish
it. He let 2 guys on and then they pulled him. Yeah.
Yep. But they got him out of the seventh with Peter Moylan and Travis Wood, right? Those are the ones that came in and finished it out for him. And then Joaquin Soria came in for the 8th inning. Pitched pretty well. And Soria, let's take a detour on Soria so far. He's pitched very well to start the season. Now, that very first outing he had, he looked a tad shaky. I don't wonder if he was kind of still had last season in the back of his head.
Maybe.
But he got that huge catch from Lorenzo Cain, catch of the year so far in all of baseball. And then some good defensive plays. And then he seems like he's kind of settled down. He's got doing well so far. He's got, he's got a 0.00 ERA.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's okay. You know, he's only, he's 11.6 K per 9 right now. And, you know, he's got a decent amount of walks. He's got a 6.4 walk per 9. But, you know, other than that, he's only allowed 4 hits, no earned runs, no runs. 9 strikeouts to 5 walks. So he is pitching, you know, through, let's see, what's he got, 7 innings pitched so far in 6 appearances out of the 13 games. he's pitching pretty well. You know, last year at this time, he had struggled some already.
Yeah.
And people were starting to call for, bad contract, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason I wanted to go on a detour, tell me if you feel this way, if you agree with what I'm seeing or not. So last year, when Soria wasn't going very well, you know, obviously he's one of those players that you can kind of tell with the body language and such, but from a pitch standpoint, you know, he was throwing up a lot of meatballs, and he's never been a, you know, overpowering guy like your Kelvin Herreras of the world.
No.
he's always been more of a finesse guy, and when he can locate, when he has his good command, and more importantly, when he has that really good movement, that kind of cut fastball movement that you know, like the Mariano Riveras and the Greg Maddoxes of the world have. You know, I'm not comparing him to those two, but, you know, pitchers like that who don't have the overpowering fastball, but just have that insane movement that they can put anywhere they want. You know, when Soria is doing that, when he's able to control the movement, that's when he's going good. And last year, he just didn't have that throughout. Even when he was going well, it didn't seem like he had it like we'd seen in the past. But this year, I haven't seen every performance, but from the three or four that I've seen of him, it appears that movement and the command has returned where it was gone last year. So, you know, I see a lot better movement on his pitches now, and he seems more confident up there. Seems like he's able to locate better. He's able to really pick his spots. He doesn't seem like he's fighting the zone, trying to guide the ball, if you will, too much. It really seems like he's much more comfortable, and I've been impressed with the movement he's had on his pitches compared to what it was last year. I mean, are you seeing the same things, or am I just maybe didn't watch enough of him last year? Or maybe I'm recency bias. I don't know.
I mean, I saw a GIF earlier today. I think it was maybe Jesse Newell, I think, maybe mm-hmm. had posted it, and it was basically one image of Soria throwing a pitch last year layered over another one, you know, from this year. And basically the ball came out of the same arm slot. The ball was moving at the same speed, but the second, you know, one of them went basically straight and the other one did have that kind of cutting kind of action. You know, I didn't read the articles. This is just something I kind of saw in passing. But mm-hmm. I do think that it's partially just the movement. I think there is a lot better command as far as he's putting the ball where he wants it. And it's not that he's just trying to get it in the zone. He's actually able to change speeds, change eye level, change in and out, and kind of work on the batter that way rather than just kind of subsisting like last year and getting through. He's actually out there more aggressive. He's attacking. And you know, he's thrown a lot of strikeouts. He's just thrown it, even at 92, 93, he's thrown it by guys. And, you know, I don't think he's trying to muscle up too much. He's probably, especially after the first couple weeks of the season, he's got to feel a lot better compared to last year, because you'll remember that Sunday night game, opening night. You know, he struggled. He gave up a couple of bloops, and he walked a guy, and he gave up some runs, and kind of made it pretty hairy there for a little bit. And that kind of trend followed him the rest of the season. So he definitely looks a lot more comfortable, a lot more in command, a lot more effective. And, you know, I thought he was going to bounce back anyway, but he's showing that, yeah, he's not too far removed from the guy that we kind of expected to see last year when the Royals signed him. So I think he's doing well. He'll probably have a game where he gives up some hits and has a rough one, and we'll see how he rebounds from that. But he's a veteran. He's been a reliever his entire major league career. He's been in high pressure situations pretty much everywhere he's been. So I think he'll be able to pull through. And this early, you know, first seven innings should give him some confidence down the line. So I think he's going to do fine. He won't be perfect. He won't be at zero ERA the whole year, but I think he'll be all right. I think he'll be someone who we come to rely on in that eighth inning role, you know, as we're kind of used to with guys in this bullpen.
Yes. So that's really all we needed to say about Soria.
This concludes the Soria segment of the show.
Yes, but it was just, it's a worthy detour because so far he's been really good. This was the Soria we wanted. It's not saying that he's Wade Davis or that he's another Kelvin Herrera or anything like that. That's not the point of talking about him, but you know, it is this is what they paid for. They paid for him to have these types of performances and for this kind of movement and stuff. So as you said, he's going to screw up at some point and everyone's going to jump on him, but credit where it's
they
due.
They will.
Credit where it's due.
Yeah, he now, and Moylan are the only two guys who have not given up a run this year. Other than Jake Junis, who pitched one inning and then was sent back to Omaha. So
yay.
Yeah.
So where was I before we, talking about last night's game.
Yeah.
Soria came in, got the eighth. Herrera got the ninth. They had a couple chances to win it in the ninth. And was this when Mondesi came up or was this later?
Mondesi came up.
It's all running together.
Two outs in the bottom of the ninth and there's a runner on second.
Runner on second. Yeah. And they lost the games. So you know how that ended up.
Yeah. So you did not get a hit there. No.
Now we talked to last week about the precarious situation of Raul Mondesi and you know how the team is being less than consistent in how in their ideology, I guess you could say, or philosophy on how to handle players like Mondesi, right? Where you Alcides Escobar in 2010, 11, 12. Well, we're keeping him up in these situations because once we start winning, he has to be good. He has to come through in those situations. Okay, fine. When you lose in 90 games, you can handle that kind of development right. at the major league level. But when you're ready to win now, when it's 2017 and the last year of the window and all this business, you simply can't lose. You can't do that. And, you know, last night's loss doesn't fall on Raul Mondesi only, you know, but it was definitely a piece of it. Like, and the Royals are taking this weird stance where they, if Mondesi is not actively causing them to lose, then they are saying that he's okay, specifically because there are other players that are, that aren't doing it wrong. We can get to that. We'll get to them in a minute here, but it's kind of weird the way they're seemingly just protecting him against all this stuff when, you know, it's fair to call somebody. And I guess, you know, I guess that part is consistent because we saw him do it with Moose when he was really struggling in 2014 before he eventually did get sent down though.
It's the Ned Yost kind of way. He's going to protect his guys. He's never, ever, ever going to rip a player, especially to a reporter in a press conference or whatnot. So I think they're mostly just trying to say the right things, but there's cause to make a change. And, you know, so far they haven't indicated that they're ready to make that change in a situation where they're trying to actually win games and make it to the playoffs one more time with this whole group intact. And when you've got a guy hitting his OPS plus is two, literally two. It's two.
Lord.
So that's
the
it.
Number. The number two.
Number two. Number two. His OPS plus is 2 points higher than yours and mine.
Yes.
You know, and it's not like, you know, his speed can be game changing. No denying that. His defense at times can be really great, but he's also made some pretty routine mistakes too. So it's not like you're giving up offense for this elite defender. He's just not doing that part of the game yet. And so when the Royals have guys like Christian Colon and Whit Merrifield, and they're both fully capable of playing regularly, it is tough to stomach seeing Mondesi go up there and just be dominated by big league pitchers. So it's tough to stomach it.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, when we saw it again last night, you know, I think did he strike out twice last night?
Struck out twice in both
and
big
then
situations, yeah.
Both big situations. And
in two different types of pitches, too.
Yeah, and he tried to lay down at least one bunt. So,
So that's the, you know, we talked about the frustration of the bunts. And it's like, I think Whit Merrifield walked on four pitches ahead of him. Then he immediately, first pitch, lays down a sack bunt. Next guy up is Alex Gordon, who gets beaned. So basically, he's bookended by a guy who walked on four pitches, who doesn't walk often, and a hit by pitch, and he gave up an out. And it's just like, that's the frustrating thing. And then later in the bottom of the ninth, he faced, he took two fastballs down the middle. Well, not down the middle. They were on the edge, and they were strikes, but they, you know, they weren't down the middle. And then he swung and missed at the third one. And then in the bottom of the 11th, he swung and missed three curveballs. So it's just like he's not hitting anything except the one pitch after we recorded last week. That's the only thing he's really hit hard. So
yes. And it's beyond my disdain for bunting in general. It's just the fact that the continual bunting shows a lack of comfort, a lack of confidence, and a lack of ability, quite honestly. So, and I feel bad being so tough on Raul Mondesi, because I am a believer in his talent and what he will be. But for this team right now, he's not right. He's not the right decision to be made. You know, he, like, you look at, you talk about OPS plus of two. Okay, so what do you possibly lose by having Whit Merrifield at second base, right? The argument that the Royals are going to make is that Raul Mondesi is, in theory, an elite defender, Gold Glove caliber defender. Whit Merrifield is not. And in theory, that's absolutely true. But how many times have we seen Mondesi already boot a couple balls? Not necessarily on, you know, routine. He has made some errors, but, you know, some of the plays he's booted haven't necessarily been routine plays. So, you know, he gets a little bit of slack on those. But, you know, he made a play last night where he was going to his right, a ball that it wasn't necessarily easy to field, but one that should have been, he should have been able to field. He did not field it cleanly, couldn't get the out at first base. And then there was a runner on third who attempted to go home after seeing Mondesi bobble it. And, you know, Mondesi was able to pick it up and make a throw to home, and Sal made an excellent tag to get the guy out. So it's like, yeah, that's great. I mean, it ends up looking good because he makes a throw that gets the guy out at home plate and saves a run. But had he fielded the ball cleanly and made the throw to first, he never would have had to worry about that in the first place. So,
right.
You know, it's just a weird, it's frustrating. It's really been frustrating me to see the Royals handle it that way. And then yet again, we heard Ned Yost echo the same thing he said in spring training this past week, where he says, you know, oh, you know, he does, you know, something every game that helps us out and all this stuff. And I understand you got to fight for your guy and you don't want to throw him under the bus in the media and everything, you know, but, you know, you don't have to tell him that he's doing something he's not, you know, you don't have to lie to him and tell him, you know, like when your kid, you know, brings home, you know, my kid hasn't like drawn anything yet, but when your kid brings home like the stick figure drawing and you're like, oh, this is so great, let's put it up on the fridge. You know, like you're encouraging them because you don't want them to get discouraged, you know, but this is not that, you know, this is not, this is not helping your kindergarten age kid trying to develop some confidence here. This is you know, the best baseball league on the planet, and you're supposed to be good enough once you get there. It would make more sense for them to have him in AAA. I don't know. I mean,
I agree with that. I mean, if you're looking just for somebody to do one good thing a game, can't any of the other options do that? I mean, I think so. You know, I think you can probably get a professional at bat a good chunk of the time from Christian Colon. Whit Merrifield homered and walked twice yesterday. You know, he's been hitting great in AAA. And, yeah, he slowed down after his initial, you know, hot start last season, and eventually was optioned back to AAA himself. But he came back and ended up with a 91 OPS plus. It's not, you know, that's a below average, but it's, you know, right now that'd be fourth on the team. It'd be fourth on the Royals right now. Fourth right now on the Royals is Brandon Moss at 66, and he has five hits. So, you know, that shows you where they're at.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, can't Whit Merrifield do something fairly similar and maybe give you more upside right now while you can develop Mondesi in AAA? And, you know, if you want to help his confidence, put him in against AAA guys, you know? I mean, he's never shown at any level that he's dominated. You know, when we saw Moustakas in AAA, he dominated. Hosmer in AA and early in AAA, he dominated. Perez hit like crazy in AAA. You know, those guys showed that they could handle that level, and they were promoted. And, yeah, there were bumps, definitely, once they made it up, and even to the extent of, you know, Moustakas got sent down. Heck, Billy Butler had gotten sent down. Alex Gordon famously got sent down.
Mm-hmm.
They came back. They found, you know, something that they could adjust, something that they could, you know, kind of hang on to in AAA. They brought it back, and they were successful later. And, you know, I think Mondesi could just use that extra amount of seasoning. And, you know, when the Royals have alternatives, you know, that puts them in a position where they can actually make that and give him a full year or most of the year in AAA and let him do it. Now, if he goes down there and hits 450 for 2 months, well, yeah, maybe see what, you know, see if he's figured out how to work a count. You see if he's figured out how to make better contact. It's awesome. That would be great. But, you know, there's a school of thought that, yeah, you can't learn to hit big league pitching if you're in the minor leagues. But I think you can also learn that somebody definitely cannot hit big league pitching while they're in the big leagues. And we're seeing that right now. He's basically a pitcher who plays shortstop. And that's not going to cut it in the American League.
No, absolutely not. And the thing not to get lost in here, we've talked about Mondesi now for 2 weeks. And, you know, he has been struggling. That's obvious. But something we don't want to get lost here is, as I mentioned when we kind of started this topic, it's not all on Mondesi. Specifically, Eric Hosmer, Alex Gordon, those are the two main guys right now that you really depended on to be vital cogs in the wheel of this offense, and they have really been struggling. Brandon Moss is another one who's been struggling mightily. As you mentioned, 5 hits. You know, he's a guy we knew would be streaky. You know, you wanted the power to be there, and, you know, Brandon Moss, we weren't exactly sure what to expect from the start of the season from him. You know, I figure, and with all of them, you figure it'll balance out, but Eric Hosmer so far has, we're April 19th, as we mentioned earlier, 6 ground into double plays,
yeah.
Ground balls into double play. Like we talked about the 58% ground ball rate. It has not improved. That's last year, the entire season, it was 58%. It's not improved so far. Obviously, small sample size still applies at this point, but when you are, and here's the problem. So, and you always see this on Twitter, right? You see someone like Eric Hosmer. So everyone loves Eric Hosmer in 2015, right? He had a pretty good season. It was solid. And obviously the huge playoffs that he had and one of the most iconic plays in Royals history, the mad dash to home in Game 5 of the World Series. So, you know, there's that. Everyone loves it. Everyone loves him. You know, last year he had his best season in terms of home runs he's ever had. Finally hit 20, hit 25. Off season, or last year he was All-Star Game MVP, World Baseball Classic. He was killing it. He did really well, helped America win the whole thing. Now, so everybody kind of loves him. And then during all this stretch, you know, starting in 2015 to that point, or to where we are now, there was a lot of kind of backlash to the Hosmer love. Like, oh, if you really look at these and this and that, you know, he's not as good as everyone says. You know, he's shown flashes of being that elite type player, but he's not consistent. He, you know, he's not an elite player because he doesn't have that consistency. He just disappears for weeks at a time during every season he's been in the majors. All that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then now, you know, the tables have kind of turned a little bit, it feels like, where you've had an off season where there was kind of talk about the Royals negotiating with Hosmer, we talked about on the show, and then, you know, Scott Boras has put it out there, Hosmer's a $200 million man. Hosmer's an elite player in baseball. Hosmer is one of the best first basemen in baseball, maybe the best first baseman in baseball. You know, that's Scott Boras. And now he's his agent, and he's got to do that kind of stuff because that's his job to talk him up. But, you know, let me back up. So when you start talking like that, regardless of the fact that you're his agent and it's Boris's responsibility to do that, that's the expectation you're setting. So I don't think anybody realistically, you know, thinks, maybe a couple of years ago we thought Hosmer would get to the point where he's $200 million man, but now I think most people don't think he's there. And, you know, that doesn't mean that he's not good, and doesn't mean he doesn't necessarily even mean that he's not an elite player. But point being, you put that out there, that's the and you know, essentially Hosmer is endorsing this and wants people to believe it himself because he wants to make as much money as possible. So you've got all this in play, and Hosmer is coming up short repeatedly, having the same problems. His swing looks terrible right now. There's a lot of moving pieces, and they all seem to be going in different directions. He doesn't seem to be consistent with it. He's rolling over on pitches that he should be driving. He's had a few bad luck. It seems when Hosmer's going bad, not only does he hit poorly and hit a lot of ground balls, but for whatever reason, his BABIP seems to be streaky as well. You know, when he squares up a ball and hits it, it seems like it's always right to somebody. Just when he's going bad, he just goes so bad. It's unbelievable. So I think the criticism of him is, you know, a lot of times I skew towards the player side and think we can be too hard on players. You know, Billy Butler, for example, I defended him for his entire time here in Kansas City. But I think the criticism at this point for Eric Hosmer is valid because, you know, he wants to be that player. He wants us to believe that he's that player. You know, he essentially shut down negotiations with the Royals because he believed he's better than whatever the Royals were offering. And even though it hasn't been public, the Royals have most definitely offered him a contract at this point, whether it was this past offseason or before. So Hosmer says, I'm better than what you guys have offered me, whatever that is. And, you know, right now he really just hasn't proven it to me. And again, we don't know what the Royals have offered, but, you know, say the Royals offered him 7 years, $100 million. He's not better than that. Not right now. Not even when you look at his career, you know, would you think that realistically, is he better than that? You know, it's the extraneous stuff that the Royals really like and that people point to, but I don't know how much value that really brings when you're someone who needs to be in a position of high offensive production. And he's just been, you know, pretty good for most of his career and downright bad at some point. So I don't know. I kind of had a kind of ranty there, but I mean,
sure.
I think you know what I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah. I mean, the thing was, Hosmer was always my favorite prospect in that whole group, that greatest farm system ever group. He was my guy. You know, and I remember reading about spring training stories where he's hitting things into the next complex, and, you know, you saw him come up, and, you know, he's 6'4", and he just looks like a dude who should be able to hit 300 and hit 40 homers every year. He looks the part. He definitely does. But his numbers are just, they just aren't there. We see flashes. We saw, you know, what was it, early last year, where he started out great. Looked fantastic for like 6 weeks, and then he just kind of went in the hole for 2 months. And it's just, that's the kind of thing that kills his value. And another thing, then we've talked about it, we did our over-under show, and we set it at the ground ball of 55%. Right now, he's at 63.4% ground balls, at least heading into tonight's game. You know, two-thirds of the time he's hitting the ball on the ground. And when you look at the way he's pitched, he's doing this on everywhere, you know, inside, outside. He's hitting everything for a ground ball. He's got like 6 fly balls, period, like all year. We're 2 weeks into the season. So it's just, it's difficult to do much when you're just hitting the ball on the ground. And he's got the hardest hit ball in baseball so far, at like 118 miles per hour, but it was a ground out. So that's what we're looking at. And earlier today, he grounded out to second base. We saw it last night. He got to a 3-1 pitch. It was, you know, on game day when you're watching on the MLB app, or if you're following on the MLB app, they take the strike zone and they break it down into a 3x3 grid. Well, the pitch that he hit was, this is in the 10th inning, I want to say, bases loaded. So bottom of the 10th, you've got bases loaded. There's one out. You know, all you got to do is get the ball in the air. Or no, it was first and second. Just get the ball in the air, maybe make something happen, maybe, you know, get the ball through the infield, whatever. This pitch was basically in the middle part of the grid. It was that fifth box, right down the middle almost. You know, it was maybe a couple inches off the middle of the plate and towards, you know, away from Hosmer. And that's a pitch that when he's on, that ball's one hop in the fence in left center, and you're scoring the winning run. And he hit it right to second base, just a little feeble grounder to second base. He was called safe initially. It was very clearly an out and another double play on the review. So that's the kind of stuff that he does regularly, is he gets to this position where, you know, he gets a hittable pitch and doesn't do anything with it. And that's the frustrating part. Because we've seen him be really good. We saw him hit 25 homers last year. We know he can hit 25 homers in a season. We know he can hit around 300. We know he can do all of these things. He never does them at the same time, and he never does them consistently. And it's like a little bit of consistency would take him so much higher each year. You know, he'd be so much better if he didn't have a month where he just did nothing. And right now he's in that month where he does nothing. Maybe the next five he's going to hit like George Brett. We don't know. But right now, all he's doing is hitting the ball on the ground. He's trying to pull everything, and it's just not working. And so he's a huge part. And when he's your cleanup hitter, and when you've got Lorenzo Cain who's getting on base 45% of the time, you can't hit a ground ball all the time. That's, you know, it's just killing everything. It's killing every rally. It's, you know, he's got to do better.
That's
than
your
that.
Real rally killer.
Right. You've got to do better than that. And he's not. And that's a big reason why this team just is not scoring runs. They're averaging 3 runs a game. And honestly, that's a little surprising. You know, they're kind of benefiting from a couple of big games early in the season, because most of the time they're scoring 2-1 run. You know, they got shut out on.
They scored 5 in the first 3 games of the season. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the runs that they've allowed when they've won games, 1 run, 3 runs, 1 run, 1 run, 2 runs, 0 runs. So that's kind of where they're at. You know, on Easter Sunday, they won 1-0 on a walk-off because they managed to shut out the Angels all day.
It just sounds hilarious when you actually say it out loud.
I mean, it just really shouldn't be that way. You should be able to score 3 to 4 runs. Well, I guess they're scoring 3 runs, but 4 runs should not be like headline news. And that's what it is right now. And Hosmer's a big part of that. Mondesi, as we talked about, is a big part of it. You know, there's only 3 guys with an OPS plus above 100. So there are a lot of fingers to blame. But when you're Hosmer and you're the cleanup hitter and you're the face of the franchise, you're expected to do more. And he's not doing that.
So to add some perspective to, we talk about the sort of disappearance or decline that he had last season. So the first half of the year last year, his slash line, he had a .299 batting average. This is in 87 games, 366 plate appearances, .299 batting average, essentially 300, .355 on base, .476 slugging. That's an .831 OPS, 13 home runs, 49 RBIs, right? 118 OPS plus, really good first half of the season. Second half of the season, .225 batting average, .296 on base, .380 slugging, .676 OPS, 12 home runs and 55 RBIs. This is in 71 games and 301 plate appearances. So he was hitting home runs at a better clip and getting more RBIs, but everything else suffered, and a 78 OPS plus, literally, excuse me, literally 40 points lower of an OPS plus in the second half of the season to the first half. And it's actually a smaller sample size in the second half. So mm-hmm. you know, I guess that can either kind of help or hurt you depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah, but it's still a couple of months. It's not like a week.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then when you actually break it down and you go by month, you know, I mean, April, March last year, he had 326, 368, 506. Was his line. Yeah. And May was even better. 333, 381, 593. See, that's the player. And
that's
seven home runs in May with 27 RBIs in May, right? So, you know, stretch that out. That's 28 games, 118 plate appearances. Stretch that out for an entire season, you know, which you're essentially, you know, let's see, multiplying that by five, roughly.
Yeah.
We get to a full season. So you're looking at 135 RBIs, 35 home runs, and a 975 OPS. I mean, that's the guy right there. That it just like you said, that's him. That's the Josh Donaldson from 2 years ago that won an MVP. You know, that's the player that's worth the $200 million. If he could do that for an entire season, good Lord, get that money, Haas. But he's doing it, you know? And that was, you know, after that, it was all downhill. Then he hit 257 in June. He hit 200 in July in 101 plate appearances. He hit 239 in August and 242 in September and October. So essentially, you know, as soon as that All-Star game hit, he just completely tanked after that.
And, yeah.
You know, he never, after that, after May, he never had a month with an OPS plus over 100. The highest he had was 93 down in September, October. So, I mean, you know, it's really frustrating. And, you know, it's completely valid, I think, to criticize Hosmer. And, you know, I do think sometimes, you know, we kind of blow players up in our head and think they should be better than they are. And, you know, Joaquin Soria, last year we defended him nearly the entire year.
Late August.
Late August. That was when I think we finally were just like, we're not going to talk about it anymore. There's nothing more to say. He sucks.
Okay, fine.
But we defended him for a long time, you know, because I think there was an expectation that wasn't in line with what
he should be better than what he was.
Yeah. So, you know, but it's hard to defend Hosmer at this. Again, it's too early for to you know make a judgment on the entire year because a small sample size, but it only feels this bad because we've seen this story play out before. We've seen bad months like this, mm-hmm. and we've seen him completely disappear. And I have no doubt that he's going to bounce back and he's going to carry the team for a month and just have another May like he had last year. I'm certain that's going to happen this year. But when you have 1 month like that, like that's great, it's fantastic. But, you know,
there's
let's get four
you got to worry about.
Yeah, let's get 4 months like that and then have a couple that, you know, and then when you do have a bad month, don't dip down to 200 with a 248 on base, a 563 OPS. Don't do that, you know. Like if the worst month he had was September, October, where he hit 242 with a 737 OPS, if that was your worst month and you had a couple more like your best, then you can start talking about being that elite player. And not only that, you know, but not only last year, but this year they're going to need that. And last year, you know, how many more games would they have won in the second half of the season if he would have been on like that? You know, I mean, at one point in the early second half of the season, they were their lowest point. They were what, 58 and 51 or something like, or I'm sorry, 51 and 58 at something like that.
Yeah.
You know, where we almost were about to write them off. And then they kind of went on that run where they got back to 500.
That August where they just didn't give up any runs.
Yeah, ever. Exactly. And they looked like they might catch the Indians. And then Cleveland just kind of took off from there and the Royals tanked it. So not intentionally, but just kind of ran out of gas. So, you know, I think the criticism of Hosmer is completely valid. And while we're talking about valid criticism, you know, and talking about how you might defend someone, you know, I think we defended a little bit Alex Gordon last year. You know, he needed to be better last year. He wasn't all that great, mm-hmm. but there were a lot of extenuating circumstances with Gordon. He had a couple kind of weird injuries that really affected how he was able to play. So he had an injury that was in spring training that kind of hampered his heart start to the season. That was last year, right? Am I thinking about that right?
There was something going on last year. I don't remember exactly, but I remember there was something.
Like a wrist thing, I want to say? Maybe. I know he's had a wrist thing before. Maybe I'm just making that up. But there was something early season that was hampering him a little bit, and we were worried about him getting back into the groove and getting back in time, because he only had like a week of spring training, right?
Not last year, no.
Oh, was that 2 years ago?
That was 2 years ago, yeah.
Oh, okay. But
yeah, well, there was something. He never really looked good last year.
Yeah, and then he had the freak thing with Moustakas, mm-hmm. and he, you know, just kind of nagging things. Seemed like he just was never able to get going, and every time he was, something would come up and kind of derail his progress. And so, you know, I'll give Alex Gordon a pass for last year. It was kind of a weird year. But this year, he's been completely healthy. He's back in the leadoff spot. You know, that's where we've always wanted him to hit for the longest time. And he just hasn't been producing, you know. And so, again, you know, last year, I think a lot of the criticism he got was a little undeserved because of some weird situations. But so far this year, he's in the same boat as Hosmer. I gotta say, he needs to be better, and the criticism that he's received is warranted. You know, he's not playing very well offensively, and especially at the leadoff spot. You know, the better that Gordon does, the better chance Hosmer has to do better, because there's going to be somebody on base. There's a better chance, I should say, of somebody being on base when he comes up to bat. So, you know, I think Gordon, as much blame as Hosmer gets, you know, I think Gordon should be right there close with him, because he's, you know, he's one of the guys that the Rose are depending on, and he's not giving them anything.
Well, coming into today, their OPS was basically the same, more or less. You know, we talked about this earlier when we were kind of planning the show. Gordon seems like he has done more, and I think some of it comes, you know, with he's maybe been in less high pressure situations himself, because he's only got to set the table, whereas Hosmer has to clear it basically. And I think that Gordon, in a couple of times like that Houston series, he had two of the big hits in that series that got the Royals on the board, you know, a couple of doubles that scored a couple of runs. And I think that probably was in the back of my mind and ended up, you know, kind of masking the slow start that he's had. You know, he's still having issues with strikeouts. We talked about Hosmer. Gordon's got a 61.5 ground ball rate going into today's game. So it's not like he's doing worlds better and getting unlucky. He's kind of in the same kind of boat. What I looked at earlier was how he was pitched, and according to BrooksBrothers.net, the league has basically been pitching Gordon down and away. And it seems like he's probably trying to pull that ball, and that's what's getting him to roll over, which has been a thing that Gordon, you know, when he first came into the league, he did that quite often. Finally kind of learned to go the other way with it, and maybe that's the solution for him. The difference between that kind of zone profile with Gordon as opposed to Hosmer is that Hosmer's hitting ground balls on everything. So pitches that he should be pulling, he's hitting on the ground. Pitches that he's trying to pull that he shouldn't, he's hitting on the ground. He's just hitting everything on the ground. I think Gordon, it might be a slight adjustment, and he can get back on track. Hosmer, it seems like he's just whatever funk he's in, he's got to get out of. But, yeah, you're right. Gordon doesn't get a pass either. You know, Brandon Moss has not been good. You know, Mike Moustakas has hit a bunch of home runs, and he's actually having a good season at the plate, but he hasn't been very consistent either. Alcides Escobar has been bad. I mean, it's top to bottom. The lineup's just not been very good. But Hosmer and Gordon are the two guys that you know, they're batting first and they're batting fourth. Those are guys that you think should be doing something. Gordon should be getting on base 35% of the time or better. Hosmer should be getting guys on and getting them in. That's what their quote-unquote jobs are in the lineup, and neither of them are doing it. So it makes it difficult to go on any sustained run and to score runs when two of your first four hitters just aren't doing anything. And especially when they're guys you expect to be doing things. You know, Gordon's got, he's an all-star. He's, you know, that top prospect pedigree. Hosmer's 27. He should be improving at this stage, and he seems to be, you know, falling faster. So those two guys are half of your first four batters, and they're just not doing anything. And so it's no wonder that the Royals are averaging only three runs a game. You know, that's just, it's kind of a miracle that they're averaging even that much when you've got so many holes in the lineup right now. So Gordon needs to hit better. He needs to just be prepared to take it the other way. Hosmer definitely does. You know, I don't know if he's just speeding himself up and trying to pull that ball or what, but he's taking pitches that, you know, we saw in the WBC even recently, that he was just crushing to left center with regularity. And when he's that guy, like those, some of those balls will leave the yard, but he can also pull them and yank them out of the yard too. So, you know, I think home runs will probably come if he can get that adjustment made. Gordon, hopefully he can fix whatever is going on with him. But those guys are going to be necessary. And if the Royals don't get anything out of those guys, they're not going to score runs. And if they don't score runs, as good as the pitching has been, at least the starting pitching especially, it can only go so far. I mean, that you know, it's not that I think they're going to blow up, but the bubble will burst. The Royals' starting pitchers aren't going to carry a 2.05 ERA the whole season. That's just you know, unsustainable for their talent level and for this kind of league. So, you know, the Royals are going to have to put up some runs, and right now they're really, really fighting doing anything like that. The offense is just, it's in a low spot.
Yeah. And, yeah, you know, I think I feel like wanting to get back on the positive train after this. So we can talk about offensively two things I want to talk about. Mike Moustakas has 5 home runs, right?
Mm-hmm.
As Salvador Perez does too, or does he still have 4?
They're both at 5.
They're both at 5. So Perez and Moose, you know, they are, in terms of power, they are riding or driving the bus, the train, whatever Rex Hudlerism you would like to say. I mean, Moose right now, he's got a 970 OPS with his 5 home runs. Let's see. Let's pull up Sal. Let's see what he's hitting at.
He's at 888.
There you go. So those two, both with base batting averages above 280. So, I mean, they're carrying their weight on offense. They're doing what we thought they should do. So that's good. But what I really want to talk about is Lorenzo Cain.
All right.
So this man is having himself a season already, folks. Now, the power numbers aren't there. He's not hit a home run yet. He's only got 3 RBIs. But in terms of everything else, he's got an 882 OPS as well, an OPS plus of 153. And he's hitting 356 with a 482 on base percentage. He's had 11 walks. He's already broken his record for most walks in a month. There's still 12 days left in the month. So, I mean, now I don't know. I think it was the last year Sal Perez started off the season with 8 walks in 8 games, or was that the year before?
Which year was that? That's a good question. I don't remember. It was one of the last 2 years.
Yeah. So we've seen starts like this in terms of plate discipline before. And, you know, we'll see if it lasts. I hope it does. And there's kind of a semi-theory that goes around that, you know, as players get older, they realize that their bat speed isn't what it used to be. And so they kind of force themselves to lay off more pitches, waiting for, you know, not one that's necessarily close enough, like maybe they did before, but the exact right pitch that they want, because they know that that's what they're going to have to do to catch up to it. I don't know if that's what's happening, you know, maybe subconsciously for Lorenzo Cain. I don't know, but he's doing incredibly well right now. I would love to see those power numbers come around. The RBI numbers, you know, the lack of ability of everyone else in the team to get on base has affected that for sure. Especially with Gordon's struggles hitting, you know, Moose is doing well.
Moose is driving himself in, so yeah. Kane doesn't even have the opportunity.
With Gordon not even on base, yeah. But, I mean, the 42 on base, like, that's incredible. That's awesome. Like Joey Votto numbers, you know. So, again, I don't anticipate that to continue for the whole year, for sure. But I definitely hope that we're seeing him be a little bit more selective to the point where, because his batting average, you know, just like you see with everyone, when your on base percentage increases, when you're more selective, your batting average is going to increase. So I'm hoping we see that, you know. So, I mean, there's, for the awfulness of Hosmer, Gordon, Mondesi so far, you know, Perez, Moustakas, and Kane have been enough to balance it out to where the Royals aren't the Blue Jays right now in terms of their overall record. You know, they're still keeping their head above water because these three guys are picking up the slack. I really like, and Lorenzo Cain last year, he seemed kind of off. It seemed like one of those years where he just was never quite healthy. Always those nagging injuries. I mean, Lorenzo Cain, his whole entire career, even when he was like 26, every time he leaves the field, he always does that thing. He puts like the hand on the hip, you know, he kind of staggers a little bit. Like he just always looks like he's like a 57-year-old man.
Right.
Trying to, you know, after mowing the lawn, trying to walk back, you know, just kind of aching.
My dogs are barking.
Exactly. That kind of a thing. But he's not, but he looks energized this year. I don't know if he knows it's contract. Yeah. Whatever, but especially out in the field, like he's making plays that the 2014-2015 Lorenzo Cain was making defensively, and when you couple that with offense, like he's having another MVP, especially if the home runs and the power comes around, he's having what could turn into another MVP type year for him, where he's at least getting votes like he did back in 2015. I'm excited from what I've seen of Lorenzo Cain so far.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, last year, towards the end of the year, he had that wrist issue that was really, you know, it gave him a lot of, he couldn't even swing the bat in September. And so I think he basically got, like, 2 months off that he hadn't gotten each of the prior two seasons. So that might be part of it. It, you know, I don't recall any real reports of, like, oh, new conditioning program. I mean, they've always done different exercises for him because he does have a history of different leg problems. So I think that's something that the Royals are just always going to be working with him to prevent more issues. But, you know, he does look more patient. He looks energized. He's, you know, the range in the outfield looks exactly kind of as you expect, where it is maybe, yeah, half a step. You can kind of see the age catching up to him. But, yeah, the patience is the most surprising thing. You know, for someone who is career high in walks for seasons, what, like 37? He's already basically a third of the way there, halfway through the first month. That's pretty impressive. You know, right now he's leading the Royals in pitches per plate appearance with 4.45, which is nearly half a pitch above the league average. So, I mean, that didn't sound like a whole lot. You know, it's only half a pitch, but, you know, think, you know, if he's coming up 100 times, he's going to see so many more pitches than the league average over that 100 plate appearance sample. So if you're looking to get a pitcher out, you know, maybe work the count against him, maybe give the guys behind you something to see, that's the benefit of that. And if it also means that he's swinging at better pitches, then that's, you know, that's even better. So that should be something that hopefully can continue. A lot of his hits so far have been infield hits. So that's definitely something that, you know, his speed has been a big benefit for that. So if he does get any kind of little injury later, or, you know, if he does slow down a little bit, you know, that might start to hurt him. But right now the returns are pretty good. The only kind of knock is that he hasn't had a lot of power yet. So we'll see if that's maybe something lingering from the hand. I hadn't heard anything about that or read anything about that, but, you know, hand injuries can be tricky. He's also someone who never had a ton of power. He showed kind of flashes and you could see the potential, but, you know, I think he could probably hit 10 homers just about any season. So, you know, I think a lot of that stuff will probably come together, maybe even out a little bit, probably won't be seeing him walk basically once a game, but you know, I think 50 walks is in there, maybe 60 walks, you know, by the time the season is over. And if he does that, that's, you know, 20 some more times that he's able to get on base. And he's a good base runner. If the speed is there, even, you know, slightly hobbled, he's probably faster than most of the guys on the team. So that's a good thing. And at least a good thing for him. And so if he's on base, that puts him in a position to score. And, you know, that's a good thing. So I like what I'm seeing from him. He's played the best out of pretty much everybody on the Royals so far this season. And that feels comfortable. It's a nice place to be. So
absolutely. And finally, we'll kind of end the show with this topic as we talk about the positive train. We kind of mentioned it last week, and they continue to roll the starting rotation. We talked about Jason Hamill's performance yesterday. That was very solid. We've seen Danny Duffy give another great performance. We've seen Jason Vargas, who tonight is pitching. let me pull this up so I can give you real time.
Six innings so far.
Not a run. Nary a run. And, I mean, Vargas is looking great.
Yeah.
And
changeup has been fantastic.
I don't want to put a spell on Vargas, but I am going to throw it out there that my bold prediction for the season was that Jason Vargas would have an ERA below 4. So I'm looking pretty good right now for my bold prediction.
Yeah. Yeah. So his ERA is 0.46 right now.
So I think I'm looking good right now for that. We'll see how this continues. Mm-hmm. But fantastic that he's doing so well. You know, Danny Duffy's pitching just like you would have hoped so far. You know, Hamill's pitching pretty well. Ian Kennedy has been pitching great
fantastic
as well.
I mean, what'd you say that?
With 2.5-ish ERA for the whole staff?
Something right? I mean, I don't know off the top of my head. But I do know that in the last 5 games, they've allowed 6 runs, and they've allowed 0 runs today. So, you know, they're going in the right direction. They're pitching great, and everybody's kind of – every turnaround, they're throwing the ball well. So the way that last year started with the starting rotation, it's a nice contrast.
Absolutely. And I as far as positive things to go, that is probably the most positive, you know, even more so than Lorenzo Cain's performance. Yeah. Just collectively how the starting pitching has done. You know, couple that
stabilized a little bit too.
It has.
You know, that twin series was so bad, and they're never going to shake that in their overall numbers. But since they've got a 3.52 bullpen ERA, that's more normal than mm-hmm. in what you would expect. They're getting good innings out of Moylan. Scott Alexander's pitched well since he's been called up. Matt Strom has pitched well in Omaha. He hasn't given up a run down there. He's striking guys out. He hasn't really walked anybody. I think maybe he has one walk and like 7 strikeouts in 5 innings. So he's probably, if they feel right with him, he'll probably be back up, and we'll see if, you know, that carries over. And if so, and you've got Moylan and Strom and Soria and Herrera, you feel pretty good. So, you know, they can put that opening series behind them, hopefully, and the bullpen can maybe be a little more of an asset than a worry, because it's still feels a little shaky a lot of these nights. But you know, if they can find some guys to fit into those roles like they're used to, I think that'll go a long way.
Yeah, I certainly don't feel as comfortable as I did from a couple of years ago.
No.
When you want to talk about
that feeling's not coming back, I don't think. That's one of those like once in a decade kind of feelings for that kind of a bullpen, like 15 and, you know, even 13 and 14 where they were really good. So it's a tough standard to meet.
Absolutely. And one that they shouldn't be expected to meet. So it's but as you said, it's stabilizing. I have faith that it's going to stabilize even further, and it's still going to be a top half of the, not just the American League, I think a top half of all baseball. league for bullpen for the league. So I think they're still going to be in good shape. Again, once they shake that twin series, but starting rotation, man, they're giving them a shot and they're doing it really well. So it's just a matter of this offense comes around and the pitching continues to progress like it has, then, you know, Royals are going to be a tough out and they can make some noise. So you already saw them, you know, rip off four straight wins against quality teams when they hadn't even, you know, the offense isn't even playing that well. So you get the offense in order, keep the pitching rolling, bullpen stabilizes even further, and you're back to the 2014-2015 type Royals that can be a true legit playoff contender.
That would be really nice. They're also kind of benefiting because Cleveland hasn't started out very well either. Their starting pitching has been really bad, which is kind of weird.
Oddly enough.
Yeah. So, you know, that kind of puts the Royals in a spot. If Cleveland had started out like 9-3, well, shoot, that's, you're already behind it. But I think you don't worry too much about catching the Twins because the Twins aren't, they're still not good. I still don't believe them. Detroit might be okay, but they're not, you know, Cabrera's already struggling and he's been hurt a couple, you know, got hurt in the WBC. He's missed, he didn't miss a game, but he came out of a game because of a back thing, which started in the WBC. Verlander got hurt or got hit pretty hard in his last start. So, you know, there are teams that aren't, they're leaving the door open for the Royals. So if they get the offense figured out and the starting pitching at least is good, it doesn't have to be phenomenal, but it's great if it is. But, you know, if they're just good and the offense can be good, I think that'll balance out to give the Royals a shot. So that it's going to take some adjustments. Not everybody's going to adjust or improve. You know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, if Gordon and Hosmer get started going, that will go a long way.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll leave you with that bit of positive look towards the possible future of the Royals this season if they can get all these things rolling at the same time. So we'll leave you there, and we will pick things up next week. We'll be back for another show. Of course, I hope we'll have another 4-game winning streak to talk about at that time. Hell, let's make it, how many games between now and then? 7, 6? However, let's make it no losses until the next time we record.
The odds of that are slim, but we'll
they're see. Slim, but we'll that's happened before.
We'll see it, yeah.
So hopefully, you know, at the very least, they win more games than they lose from now to then, and they can start climbing back above 500. But yeah, they have benefited from kind of slow starts from some of the other teams in the division. So we'll be back next week. Be sure to tune in. Be sure to visit our sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn, fantastic place to go if you want to have a good time, like I often do when I go out. I'll usually hit up Kelly's, as should everyone. Great place. We'll probably have another watch party or two there for the season. Details yet to be revealed, but as we often do, we'll have some during the season for random games that we think would be good ones to get everybody together for. So keep your ears open for those, and be sure to visit Baseball Prospectus Kansas City, bpkansascity.com. Fantastic place as always. We've got tons of good stuff always. Dave Leske put out an article today kind of similarly talking about the almost like the pros and cons, if you will, of the season so far, about how in some areas the Royals may be underachieving, in some areas they may be overachieving. So what's actually, what's the actual overall outlook on the Royals?
What does it all mean, man?
What is exactly? Leske's very good at putting all that into perspective. So definitely go and check that out. Clint Skoll's always dropping some great prospect knowledge on there, and all of our great writers delving into different topics throughout the season. Be sure to visit BP Kansas City. You know, you can go to Kelly's and have a beer and read a BP Kansas City article on your phone whilst listening to our podcast via your phone. I mean, you can do it all.
The full experience.
The full experience.
We're working on a VR app.
That's right.
No, so nobody wants that. There's no demand for that.
Nobody wants that VR. VR podcast.
Right. Here's my kitchen table.
Yes. Whoa. It would essentially be exactly whatever you're doing right now. Cool. That's what a VR podcast would look like. Maybe even more boring than what you're doing.
Basically, my mom keeps texting me to tell me that my sister's at the game tonight. So I'm like, that's nice, Mom. I knew that.
That's fantastic.
You too could get that on the BP Kansas City virtual reality app.
Yes.
You could stay also tuned. Yeah.
So until next time, thank you all so much for listening. We greatly appreciate all our fans, all the listenings and the interactions. So be sure to tune in next week. We'll see you then. Until next time, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. Every town has a place where elites gather for witty conversations over trendy cocktails. In Kansas City, that place is definitely not Kelly's Westport Inn. From its humble beginnings at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue, Kelly's Westport Inn has seen it all. Pioneer wagon trains filled with families heading west, Civil War battles, and Major League Baseball championships. Kelly's is born of history and tradition, and we hope you'll allow us to become part of your history and traditions as well. Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road, Kansas City, Missouri.